Okay, everyone hear me? Audio's okay? Thank you very much. I want to welcome all the members and new members here for our 23rd season. Time passes quickly. Some of you are here, I'm sure, for all of those 23 years, and some of us are a much shorter period of time than that. My name is Malcolm Chancy. I am your president for this year. I would like to have all the new members. We have some new members in the crowd. Would you please stand? Our new members, they have green dots on their badges. Welcome. Also, we have some new directors, I believe, that are here. Would our new directors please stand? Thank you very much. I would also like to acknowledge my predecessor, Wally Abbott, who had a great year last year. Wally, I know you're here. Thank you. Al Horton, where's Al? Al's our president-elect, and will be in charge next year, is working on the program now. Thank you, Al. Our special thanks to the Naples Beach Hotel and Golf Club and the Watkins family for providing us these facilities. I would also like to announce that our next speaker will be the Senate Minority Leader, Senator Mitch McConnell from the state of Kentucky. And he will be here on December the 7th. We'll be across the way at the bigger room, which I'm sure we're going to need. And we're looking forward to having him here. I encourage you to make all the arrangements that you possibly can to make that meeting. I would now like to introduce Reverend Ted Sauter. Ted is with the North Naples United Methodist Church. Ted?
It's a privilege to pray with you and for you. I was given the choice to pray at one or three or four of the first sessions this year, which was a privilege. And I said, who needs prayer most? And they said, well, we start with a banker this year. And I said, am I to pray that he's interesting or that banking business is lucky? Or am I praying for all the bankers who this year need stress relief or what? And so it is a privilege. Some people don't believe in public prayer, but going all the way back to the Constitution, and I think he's on one of those bills I don't often see, Benjamin Franklin suggested that we begin public meetings with prayer to overcome our egos, and he was not the most religious of people. And so our coins and bills still say, in God we trust. And I want to pray with you, and whether your tradition is Protestant as I am, or Catholic, or Jewish, or some other religion, or perhaps you're in flux right now, we still need to remember that there's one who gives to us. So will you pause to pray with me? Our God, we are privileged to live in America, and we are blessed to live in Naples. And we are privileged to be here today to enjoy good food, good fellowship, interesting and stimulating thoughts. It's a good thing. Many people here have worked a lifetime to achieve and have sacrificed and helped make this a great country, and we thank you for them. Others continue to be active and develop this community and our nation. Be with us as we gather together that we might be thankful, particularly during a season of Thanksgiving, thankful for your blessings, for each other, and for the opportunities ahead of us. In your name we pray. Amen.
Okay, thank you very much. Go ahead and start your meal. If you could start your meal quietly, we're going to proceed with our student guest program, and I'd like to introduce Wade Keller, who is treasurer. Yeah. Okay, can you hear me? Okay. We're now ready for our student guest program. I want to introduce Wade Keller, who's our treasurer and in charge of this program. And so with that, Wade, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Malcolm. Good morning, everyone. Good afternoon. Greetings. We're always happy when our students come on up and join me here at the podium, please. We're always happy when we have a host, a person to sponsor our Students of the Month. Our sponsor today is Lloyd Liggett. Lloyd is Senior Vice President with Northern Trust Bank for the Collier County and Lee County region. Lloyd tells me that he's been in Naples for 25 years, but he's been with Northern Trust forever. Lloyd, would you please stand and let us thank you for your sponsorship. Now, it's always a treat to hear from the students. I've given them special instructions this year. Their instructions are to speak for 1 minute and to tell us what are their interests and what are their achievements. And I'm going to introduce them by name and tell you what their career objective is and what their college choice is. The first sheet I've got here, the first person is Josh Patton. Josh? Josh is planning to be an orthopedic surgeon. After majoring in sports medicine, his college choice is Stanford or Yale. Josh Patton.
Hello, everyone. In school, I participate in the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Mu Alpha Theta, which is a math club, and Envirothon, which is for environmental science. And like you said, I plan on majoring in sports medicine to become an orthopedic surgeon. And in high school, I played baseball and run cross country. Last year, I was lucky to be a member of the district champion baseball team. And we set a school record for wins. We went 24-3. So I was really glad to be part of that. And I'm playing baseball this year. It'll be my third year on varsity, so glad for that. And in my spare time, I love boating, fishing, camping, canoeing. Me and my family, we've gone canoeing on a lot of rivers in northern Florida, almost all of them. We really enjoy that. And I love sports, really. I don't play on teams, but I play soccer, basketball, golf, and all in my spare time. And which isn't very much with all the things I do, but I just try. And that's all I have. Thank you very much.
Our next student is Nancy Flewelling. Nancy's career goal is to be President of the United States. Or she would settle for being Secretary of State. Or she might just own her own business. So, I mean, she's thinking big. Her college choice is University of Penn at Wharton at the University of Penn, or Princeton. Nancy Flewelling. Nancy.
Okay. My name is Nancy Flewelling. I am Vice President of Junior State of America, which is a political debate club at our school, and Performing Arts Club. I have been singing with the Philharmonic Youth Chorale for 5 years now, and I've had solos from Wicked, which I performed at the Philharmonic, and Yentl. I also am in Brighton Beach Memoirs, which is a play at our Naples High School, which is performing December 5th, if any of you are interested. I'm interested in biology, politics, business. I have been published in N Magazine. Last year I won first place in the vocal competition for Naples Music Club, and last year our mock trial team was lucky enough to go to states, and I took home the place for first place witness in the state of Florida. I have been working at the First Presbyterian Church, where I am co-conductor of the children's choir there, and that's very fulfilling. I really love it. So that's all I have to say, and I hope you enjoy your desserts. So they put them right in front of your face. They're really good.
Our next student is Michael Axline. Michael plans to be a marine biologist and attend the University of Virginia. Michael.
Hello. As you said, I'm Michael Axline. In school, I'm in the Mu Alpha Theta, National Honor Society, and Model United Nations. I like chemistry, biology, and history. For sports, I'm on the varsity swim team. I've been out for 2 years, and this year I'll be playing on varsity tennis, which I played on last year. I enjoy sailing in my spare time and basically all outdoor activities. I grew up in a family of six children, and I like participating. Well, I like volunteering in my community. I volunteer with Eden and National Heart Association, which is putting on the Heart Walk this Saturday if you want to come. And I don't know, other places around town. Oh, yeah, and the Optimist Club. I was a coach for a little girl soccer team. I don't know if I took all my time, but I'm done. Thank you.
Our next student is Mala Perez. Mala intends to become a cardiovascular surgeon. Her college choice is Brown or Princeton. Mala.
Hello, my name is Marla Perez. I am valedictorian of the junior class at Naples. I'm in Mu Alpha Theta, National Honor Society, Spanish Honor Society, and several other clubs. I enjoy playing lacrosse, and I was MVP last year. I like to volunteer in my community. I volunteer at the church where I play the violin. I've been playing for 5 years. And I also like tutoring younger students in various subjects. And I like attending Naples High School.
Our next student is Chris West. Chris is planning to have a career in being a non-invasive cardiologist. And his choice is the University of Colorado at Boulder. Chris.
All right. First, I'll just start off by saying I'm not used to speaking in front of, 100 people. Usually it's, a class of 32, but I'll see what I can do. I'm in National Honor Society, along with pretty much everyone here. Mu Alpha Theta, we're all in it, most of us at least. It's fun. I'm also in Junior RTC, which is basically a leadership course. It's pretty fun. I mean, you're able to help other people better themselves. You help the community. Like, as it is, just this weekend, I have to do 3 different community support activities. I love skiing, if that means anything, which is why I'm going to Boulder. Even if the school's miserable, I'll deal with it as long as I can ski. I mean, it doesn't really matter to me. I love the scuba dive, which I guess I'll come back to Florida just to scuba dive, but it's worth it, I suppose. I paintball, but that's pretty much it. I can't compete with a valedictorian, but I tried.
And our final student, please welcome Stephanie Bunnett, who plans to be a forensic scientist and attend Princeton or Stanford. Stephanie.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Stephanie Bunnett, and I recently moved to Naples from Zimbabwe in Africa due to political instability in the country. In my last year of junior school, I was awarded the Headmaster's Trophy for outstanding academic, social, and sporting activities. I also, in my first year of senior school, I started racing triathlon competitively, and I traveled to South Africa and won a gold medal in the South African Championships. In that same year, I also traveled to Cape Town in South Africa and won a silver medal in the All-Africa Games. I was also shortlisted for the Olympics at that time for triathlon, but unfortunately, I became very ill with chronic fatigue syndrome, so I had to stop racing. So I devoted my time to staying in the top 10 of my year at senior school, and I also did a lot of modeling. I won top model of Zimbabwe at that time, and that's all I really, really have.
Y'all go ahead and sit down. What a great bunch of kids, and you might want to meet them after lunch. You might want to meet them after lunch concerning their career goals or their college of choice. And Malcolm will be back in a few minutes to introduce the speaker.
Hello. Enjoying your lunch? Okay, while you're having dessert, we're going to have John Fumagalli, who's responsible for our guest speaker today, have John introduce his speaker. And with that, I will turn it over to John Fumagalli. If you will welcome John.
Thank you, everybody. Good afternoon. I'm very pleased and proud to be here today to introduce our guest speaker, the chairman and chief executive officer of our company, Mr. Bill Osborne. I know that you have the detailed bio in front of you, so I'm not going to rehash the information, but I did think, I think I should turn off my BlackBerry first. I do want to spend a brief moment to give you a perspective as to what Bill has meant to our company. Bill Osborne has been a true leader and an outstanding steward of Northern Trust, not only in his 12-plus years as chairman and chief executive officer, but also throughout his entire 37-year career with our company. At times when the conventional wisdom in the industry says that size and consolidation were necessary for banks and that only the big would survive, Bill avoided large M&A transactions and plowed ahead with industry-leading growth rates and did it on an organic basis. When people said he led a small Midwestern institution, Bill challenged them by building a premium wealth management franchise in the United States that now serves over 20% of the Forbes 400 wealthiest individuals. When he took over as CEO, Northern Trust was best described as a domestic institution with an international presence. In the early 90s, we had roughly 7% of our revenues coming from international activities. Critics said he ran a great company, but the organization would never be able to be transformed. Under his leadership, the company has been transformed and is now more aptly described as a global institution with a domestic presence. In fact, now roughly 35% of the revenues come from international activities. And when some said he was too conservative with the balance sheet and should take more risk, he ignored their comments and avoided the pitfalls that many other institutions have experienced and some are experiencing today, as you know. Bill has been an innovative contributor to the success of Northern Trust. Additionally, I can tell you from personal experience, he has been a terrific role model for so many of us within the company, leading by example, instilling the right values, and guiding us with principles that endure. Ladies and gentlemen of the Forum Club, it's my great pleasure to introduce you today to the Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of the Northern Trust, Mr. Bill Osborne.
Thank you, John. It's truly a pleasure to be here today, and today I hope to spend a little time maybe putting today's events, when I say today's events, what's been going on in the economy and in the world in a little bit of context. I get asked an awful lot about that, and I want to kind of talk a little bit about globalization, and I have some background in that issue, so I'll be glad to talk a little bit about that. And then I want to spend some time on what's happening on Wall Street and Main Street today, because it does impact everybody here. But first, I want to say to the high school students who we have here today, when you finish college, come to Northern Trust and you have a job, all right? Particularly all of you that get into Stanford and Princeton and those schools, I think that's terrific. I debated today whether to talk about some of the challenging issues first, and then get into maybe some of the more optimistic parts. But I'm going to start with the more optimistic areas and come into the more challenging side. And I'm going to do that for a reason, and I hope that'll make sense as we go through this. As John indicated, Northern is, I'm not going to talk very little about Northern. I know you don't want to hear about it, so I'm not going to do that. But I want to put this in context. Today, we administer over $4.1 trillion, that's with a T, of assets for institutions around the world. In the institutional space, half of that $4 trillion, $4 plus trillion, about $2 trillion, is related to what we call global custody assets outside the U.S. So these are assets that our clients are investing in, we're administering, invested around the world. And we deal with all the major institutions in all the different countries. We have a major relationship with the Social Security Fund of China. We have an office in Beijing. We deal in Tokyo, in Japan, with the major institutions in Hong Kong, in Singapore, in Australia. We have what's called the Australian Future Fund, in the New Zealand with the New Zealand Superannuation Fund. We deal in Africa. We deal in the Middle East with the central banks. We deal throughout Europe in a major way with all the major financial institutions and global fund managers, as well as with the major pension funds in the U.S. and around the world. So we have a very interesting view and understanding of global asset flows, where money is being invested and why, and understanding that. And candidly, I've spent a lot of time building this business in different parts and have a very good dialogue with the heads of the central banks in each of these countries around the world, which is a very interesting viewpoint. And when I say that and why it's important, if you look at the growth in market capitalization today around the world, outside the U.S. has been growing much faster than in the U.S. If you go back and look at the equity growth in the different markets in the U.S. from 1998 until 2006, and you got to remember we had a little market correction in 01 and 02, the compound growth rate of equities is 3.4%. If you look at Europe, the Middle East, and Africa during that same period, it's 6.7%. And if you look at the Asia-Pacific region during that period, it was 8.2%. So the rest of the world outside of the U.S. has been growing at nearly double to triple the rate that the U.S. has from an equity performance basis. And anybody would look at what's going on today, and those of you who traveled particularly over to Asia and have seen the changes going on over there, it's very dramatic. Give you a little tidbit. In China today, 300 million people are the equivalent economically to our middle class in the United States. That's more than our total population is in this country. Many of you, if you travel and you go to those wonderful hotels and you go down in the lower levels and they have all the high-end stores down there, the people buying are not the visitors, they're the locals. There's a lot of money being made and created today around the world, and there's a real modernization going on in just a major, major way. Some people, we have, for instance, 30% of our employee base is outside the U.S. And as John said, 35% of our net income is outside the U.S. and will be about probably around 40% in this year. So you need to look at this in a major way to understand what's going on. And the companies that are doing well today in business have globalized. They look at the world first. And I will just tell you from my perspective, the economic drivers around the world are linked in together. The political world is not. I think that's pretty clear. But the economic world knows and understands what's going on. And to a great degree, one of the interesting parts is the U.S. organizations and companies are looked to as leaders economically around the world. So what you see is, I give you in the banking industry, in China, they are always looking for the U.S. institutions to invest in their financial institutions to help bring expertise to those markets. And that's happened. Many of the major Chinese banks have anywhere from 10 to 20% ownership from financial institutions either in the U.S. or the U.K. today. And this is a very important development to watch as it happens. And if you look at just the population and what will be a driver as they become more consumers, whether it's in China or India, you're going to start to see how this world works together is extremely important. Nearly every organization thinks about their whole business and the way they're manufacturing and distributing product. And we do the same thing in the financial services sector. We try to provide our back office operations in locations around the world that are close to our clients. And so we can have a cost structure and a delivery structure that's lined up together. I'm on the board of Caterpillar. Caterpillar, we put operations in all these countries around the world where so we can line up our cost again and our revenues in the right way. And you cut down on your shipping costs. There are a whole variety of reasons that make sense. So your major companies today in the world really are looking at this as a one world, one market. It's not the U.S. versus the rest of the world. It's the U.S. with how we work with the rest of the world today. It takes a major change in the mindset. Some people ask me, well, when you do that, well, you lose employees and you lose employment. Just the reverse. What happens is your business starts to grow overseas and you need to add more people here to support what you're doing in different areas of the world. What's happening in the world today, it's quite positive. Asia has had very strong growth, as you know. Europe has had good growth. It's starting to slow a little bit, but it's become a very important market for institutions. And I think you're seeing, obviously, other parts of the world that will gain, that have been what the old BRIC countries are. You know, you get, you know, Russia, Brazil, China, and India are all going to be very important markets as we go forward. And that's an important issue to understand, because all institutions, in my view, need to think globally to be successful going forward, particularly if you're playing on a large scale. And I'm one that's optimistic that those institutions are going to help drive and create a better economic environment in every country going forward. I know people get worried about here, but I do believe we all are connected in a major way. The interesting thing, though, and I'm going to start backing into the U.S. now, and we see this because of the clients we deal with, the marginal dollars that are created overseas, whether in China with the trade flows that go back to China, the consumers here, you know, we're buying their product, paying dollars, they're accumulating dollars over in China, whether it's in the Middle East, they accumulate dollars because oil is traded on dollars. Those dollars are now used to be coming in and buying our securities in this country. And that's kept our interest rates low. The marginal dollar, because these organizations that are accumulating, they don't want to see the U.S. destabilized, so they're not pulling it out. But their next dollar is not coming in to the U.S. anymore. It's being invested elsewhere. And listen, if you saw and you've watched anybody been traveling to Europe look at the cost today, it's pretty mind-boggling. In fact, look at the reverse. Look at the people that are coming to buy in the U.S., whether it's real estate or go shop. You know, I go shopping. If I'm in New York and look around, I think it's darn expensive. I was in an elevator on Wednesday morning. I was getting ready to give an analyst presentation. I was coming down the elevator, and there were two couples, one was from France and one was from Spain, and I heard them speaking their language. I mainly speak English, so I, you know, kind of jumped in and I said, "Tell me, you know, what you're doing." "Oh, we came here to shop for Christmas." You know, so you got to look at how this world works today, and you know, and the dollar and the value of the dollar is a major issue out there. I think as the Fed gets, you know, is looking at what they're going to do, they're going to have to be very careful as to how low they go, because I hate to use the word trash the dollar. It's one would argue it's been trashed already, but you could still see it with further weakness if interest rates come down very much more. So, in my view, one of the great strengths that's going on in our economy today, and in fact, I would argue that we have benefited over the last 5 or 6 years in the U.S. from this globalization in a major way. One of the reasons we've worked through various issues, including oil price challenges, and how that translates through the economy, is because of the way this world works together. Now, that's the good news. I want to come back and talk about what's going on in Wall Street today. You all have heard of the word subprime, I'm sure, by now. You've read the word structured investment vehicles, CIVs, collateralized debt obligations, CDOs. I'm going to give you a perception. This is my view. This is not from my economist, or this is not from our investment people, but looking back at what's happened over the 5 or 6 years and what I call the unintended consequences of some actions that have been taken in the U.S. and how we're dealing with it right now, and what I view is going to be a period of time that's going to take to work through this. But if you all will go back to 2001, 2002, we went through a period where in the 90s there was a stock market, dramatic increase in the stock market. There was created, many will call it, remember Greenspan, irrational exuberance. Remember that phrase? Yeah. And people will talk about the technology bubble, and all the money we had to spend for Y2K. Those are all real issues. And that led to clearly an exuberant period in the market, which created a bubble that was pierced, and it really deflated an awful lot in 2001 and 2002, causing, at that time, the Federal Reserve to lower interest rates dramatically. And I was involved because I was on the board of the Federal Reserve Bank in Chicago, and lowering of rates was an interesting issue for me because in my career, I had never seen the Fed fund rate below 3%. In my career, I had seen banks able to work through the system effectively with the rates going that low. But it was clearly a new phenomenon when the Fed brought the rates down to 1%. And I was candidly concerned about savers, about people who were trying to save money and what fixed income returns would be. And there was not a lot of place to park your money where you could earn very much at that point in time. This is only a few years ago, and I know most of you will remember this very well. And we even got concerned because some of our money market funds, we were down to the point where, by the time anyone paid, fees and stuff, there was no earnings coming out of this at all. So this was an environment then that caused a regeneration in our economy. Home building really took off. All of a sudden, with interest rates so low, the housing market really started to gain momentum. And because people would refinance and equity values started to increase in homes, and you read about this, I'm just to remind you, all of a sudden there was an environment where people would take the equity out of their homes, you'd hear about that, borrow against that and use that to purchase goods and services. I mean, there was consumer spending was driven by this growth in home equity that was really started in 2001 and 2002 and kind of went up until about maybe a year ago. And to some degree, that was good. The problem was the mortgage environment started to become feverish, and institutions started to have lax procedures around what they were doing. They had what are called low documentation or no documentation loans that they were making. They would, instead of holding loans to value at 60, 70, 80%, they would go to 90%, and many of them would go to 95% and give you a teaser rate and let anything go into an accumulation on your mortgage value, so you're going to get a higher mortgage over in when it reset in a few years down the road. So you had that phenomena going on, and all the time everyone was feeling good because the economy looked reasonably positive during this period. And it was. I mean, there's a lot of fueling of the economy from this. The same time, investors were looking for higher yields. So they were looking, they wanted to make more. Everybody wanted to make more. It's not just the equity markets in any way to invest. And so Wall Street started taking all these mortgages that had different risk and higher rates in return and started to tear them apart, create what they call tranches around this. And these tranches had different risk characteristics. But in the end, when they put all this out, some of these risk characteristics ended up being quite high. So, as every good story goes, it hit the wall. All right? Nothing is forever. Everybody in this room, I think I can say, except for the high school students, has been through the cycle. You know, we have a business cycle. And as I said, it will come again. And it'll get better, and then a cycle will come again and hit, and there'll be a downturn. And I don't think that we'll ever keep from having a cycle. And that's good because it cleanses the environment. It does. Now, you may not feel good about it when the cleansing takes place, but that's what's happening. And that's exactly what's going on right now. You have institutions that were in the process of packaging these assets that have to write them down because we now have a problem. And I don't need to tell you, and that is home equity values have come down. Many of the people, as they reach their limit in terms of how much leverage and debt they can take on, are now have to pay the piker, and they have to, in effect, go in and can't make the mortgage payment or can't make a payment on their equity credit line, and delinquencies. And I've got a great graph on this. I'm not going to show it to you, but I'll explain it to you. In the assumptions of subprime debt, after 20 months, the assumptions were that about 9 to 10% of the mortgages that were put in these packages would have delinquencies. That was the assumption. The maximum was 12%. The rate today is 22%. Okay? That's what's happening. So you have a period of time where you have this issue from the mortgage side that needs to be dealt with. In the meantime, now this is not meant to, you know, slam anybody, but there was a great industry that really has taken off in the last 5 years called private equity and hedge funds. But private equity has been a very great place to put money, right? You know, everybody thinks they made all the money in the world. And why? You wonder why they were able to do that. And I've got friends in this business. I know this business pretty darn well. As this period of this Goldilocks period we had, when interest rates were low, all of a sudden the risk premium that used to be 350, 400 basis points above the equivalent risk-free bond, if you will, started to shrink. And here these private equity firms could go to the banks, not Northern Trust, I'm sorry, and could borrow, and their equivalent rate was Treasury plus 100 basis points. I mean, it was like giving money away, and you heard me say no documentation or low docs with very few credit requirements in terms of covenants. And this, the amount of money that was committed to by August of this year that had been committed to by the banks that had yet to be closed by those financial institutions was $300 billion. All right? So what happened is these interest rates, all of a sudden, you know, the mortgage crisis hit, the contagion started. This stuff spreads. That's the way these things work. And the question is, where does the contagion end? But this went into the private equity market because the banks started to lock up on liquidity. And so all of a sudden you've seen all these write-downs on Wall Street because they had to take these deals that they already agreed to at this T plus 100 basis points. And they either tried to back out of them, some of them were able to renegotiate a little bit. Most of them are committed deals, and so they had to write down these assets on their balance sheets, even though they hadn't closed on some of them, but they had commitments out there. So you've got this issue of subprime coming through the system in various vehicles, and you have this issue of all this private equity financing that has to be written down. So you've got a lot of things happening in the financial world right now. And I, for one, I don't think you can have this without having some kind of impact on our economy. I mean, I wish I could say we could skate through this if everything's Goldilocks, but I don't believe that it's happening that way. And as we look backwards, we're seeing, you know, people say, well, GDP growth in the third quarter is still good. Yeah, but you got to look forward in this case. And I think you're going to see some reasonably tough periods over the course of the next 12 months as this gets to be worked out. And it's going to take some fair amount of work. It's going to take write-downs. It's going to have to, it's going to take an understanding of where the risk is. Because in our business, if you don't have transparency and understand what the asset is, then you will not have confidence in that asset, and there won't be any dollar flow or liquidity into that. And so you have a challenge right now of more transparency into Wall Street, into the kind of investment vehicles out there. And I would venture to say that everybody in this room is touched a bit by this. You probably don't know it because your money market funds might be invested a small part in some of these vehicles. And some of the institutions that you're working with may have a little lockup on liquidity right now because they have to deal with this. And so that's a natural part of the system. Now, there's a silver lining in this, and it's one that you need to understand. All that packaging and distribution of securities that's taken place actually spreads risk out. So it used to be if you had a mortgage loan from Northern and you were a deadbeat and didn't pay that loan off, or didn't make the payment on time, we could work that out with you. You know, there was a lender and a borrower together. Today, it doesn't work that way. There's a mortgage servicer. That loan has been sold to a third party. That third party has packaged it in all these different instruments, and they've been distributed out into the marketplace. So there's a trustee of those bonds that needs to go in and hire someone that they're delinquent payments to go in and try to find and get the borrower and then work on what they do with that asset, whether they foreclose on it and then sell it. All that has to be worked through. And that's why you're seeing, and that's going to be the challenge, you're going to see that depression coming on an overbuilt market for housing, homes that are going to come back on the marketplace, not here in Naples, not in this part of Naples. Go east from here a little bit. No, I'm serious about that. But it will hit there. And I told a group the other day in Fort Myers. I think Florida is in a recession right now. You may not agree with it, but you may not see it here. But the reality is, it's a tough environment right now. But because these assets have been distributed around, and there's a word that many of you have heard called derivatives. All right, the derivative is when these assets have been moved around and you can take risk and sell it to someone else for a price. And that has happened in a major way on all these assets around the world. So all of a sudden, you pick up the paper and you read Deutsche Bank, Barclays, HSBC in the UK. What are they doing over here, huh? They either have these assets on their books that they've bought. And so you're seeing this risk is distributed all around the world. So that globalization, that globalization I talked to is actually a good thing because it's picking up all this risk everywhere. So it's not going to come down just in one spot where it used to. It used to come down to the lending institution. Now it's spread all over everywhere. And I actually think that will be helpful as we work through this issue because the pain will be distributed out among a lot of organizations in a lot of different places. I'm one of these. I want to end and then go to questions here, but this is a very troubling time in the financial services industry right now, and it's one that, in my view, we'll work through. There was a lot of capital generated in the last 5 years as people made a lot of money on all these deals. Okay, so as long as they didn't pay it all out or buy back all their stock, they're okay. But and some of them did do that, but you want to watch that. But the fact of the matter is that we will be able to work through this, but I hope that we've learned some lessons about it. And so I hope as we deal with this, the next cycle, number one, we don't create this false sense of excitement by lowering interest rates quite as dramatically as what we did back earlier this decade. And I think you need to be prepared. Not that long run, I think things will be fine, because I think these broader global issues are going to be positive. But be prepared in the near term that it's going to be a tough period. You know, and all of you in this room, I see enough gray hair along with mine. People have known how to pull their belt a little bit tighter for a period of time. That's what's going to have to happen here. People are going to have to look at how they manage, not probably most of the people in this room, but others in our society are going to have to deal with this and have to work with it. And I could give you lots of other statistics about job growth and where it's been in the housing sector and what it's meant to our economy, but by and large, the message is we're going through a tough period. It's going to take a little while to work through that. So let me stop, and I thank you for inviting me down here, and let me answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Bill, before we get to the questions and answers, I want to present you with two documents, two booklets rather, one on Naples and one on Marco Island for your cocktail table. And I'm sure you'll find homes on most of your officers listed in there and illustrated.
Good.
John, questions and answers.
We got a lot of questions here, and I don't think we'll be able to go through all of them, but let me just try to package these together. And then the first question I've kind of packaged with two. Do you fear protectionism, and if the Democrats control the White House, will they be successful in fighting globalization?
I don't like to get into politics because, candidly, I hate politics. I hope there are no politicians here, but people move around on you. It's what happens. That's part of the answer to this one. I think protectionism is wrong. I mean, I'm a big free trade person. I think it's the right way to go. I think this country has such adaptability to issues, has innovation built into how we operate, moves human resources around better than any other country in the world today. And so it's not to our benefit to be protectionist. It's our benefit to open it up and to work with open borders, in my view. And you just have to see how we continue to innovate in this country to really understand how powerful we are. And that's, again, part of the optimism that I share, that the future is always going to be a bright one, not that we don't go through these troubles, but I think it would be a big mistake to get protectionism at this point in time.
There were a variety of questions about the dollar, and so I've kind of lumped those together to say, you know, what is your biggest concern about the prospect for a weak dollar, and is there more to come?
Well, I alluded to the issue of interest rates. And where we are today with the Fed funds rate, this is just looking at all the factors out there. There is going to be some pressure on the Fed to lower the interest rates a little bit more. Now, they're going to look at the signals on the economy, some of the concerns they have, and they're going to try to deal with that. I worry that if we go too far lowering interest rates, that the dollar will move down more dramatically than where it is now. I personally would like to see us have some, I don't know, guts is the right word, but, you know, some fortitude to flatten this out. Maybe there is another lowering of the interest rates and stay there, because I think that'll keep the dollar in much better parity with their other currencies. And then as we start to get our house in order, get back towards a balanced budget, deal with some of the issues, and these are all tough issues, but that's what it takes. We can get this dollar back, I think, in a little stronger position than where it is today. But near term, the pressure is to go down a little bit.
This question comes from a student. What is the most effective strategy you've used to actively further Northern Trust in our growing international economy?
Well, what we've done is we've gone around the world and we have become involved with the financial systems in different parts of the world, and we've been very proactive at that. And by doing that, we've been able to get into places like China early. We're an investment advisor to the Social Security Fund of China. We deal with the largest insurance company in China, China Life, as a custodian for them. And we've gone into places like Australia and New Zealand in the same way to get in with those people that are involved. And what we do is so different. We are one of four organizations in the world that can service global assets and provide information on those assets on a daily basis and provide risk and performance around all the different managers around. So we have a unique capability that anyone that's investing globally, particularly in big numbers, needs. So we have been able to go into these countries and candidly position ourselves to be of assistance to them. And once you do that, then you can also do other things, such as help on the asset management side and things like that. So we've been proactive at how we've moved into these markets in a major way.
Got another student question, and I'm going to combine this with a regular question because they're about the same. Are we headed for a recession or on the brink of a depression?
Well, I think there is no question that we are going to be in a very low growth period, probably over at least the next 6 to 12 months. I'm not smart enough to tell you whether we're going to go into a recession. I don't believe we'll go into a depression, but it's possible we could go into some negative growth for a period of time. Again, I don't think that's all bad. I know it's tough when you're going through it, but it's like everything in life that you've had to work for. Sometimes there's pain, and then you feel better on the other side, and you'll feel better on the other side of this one. And there will be another side. I mean, there always has been. I don't mean to be Pollyannish about it. But I would tell you that I think it would not surprise me if we go into a modest recession.
What are your biggest challenges that you face as CEO and chairman of Northern Trust?
Well, I'm stepping down as CEO at the end of the year, so, you know, I'm in good shape out of there. No, the challenges, listen, I think there are a lot of very smart, able people in this room that have done a lot more than I have, but most of my job is around people management, about strategic direction. It's around risk management. It's around regulatory issues today, unfortunately. But that's how I spend my time. I think most and worry most about people, though. That's where I spend a lot of time. That's what I worry about. I got 11,000 members of my family, and that's the way I've viewed it. And that takes a lot of time to kind of work through all the ways you maneuver people around over to develop their careers and to develop your organization so you don't get caught up in some of the issues that you're seeing in Wall Street.
Are you in favor of the Superfund to bail out the sieve problem, and how long do you think it will take for the subprime problems to be over?
Well, as I said, the subprime issue is going to take, I think, at least, you know, probably at least a year to work through, because it'll constantly be a problem trying to find out where the bottom is. Because as you deal with more homes on the market, it's going to drive down home values, so that trying to find the real valuation of these securities is going to be difficult. So I think it's going to take a little bit of time to work through that, and you know, a year just seems to be a horizon that we ought to look to. It may be longer. With regard to the Superfund for the SIV, for those of you who may not know, there are structured investment vehicles that are sponsored by many financial institutions, and the dollars in these are into the hundreds of billions of dollars. And there has been a recommendation proposed by the Treasury, and some of the major banks have worked to create a fund that would buy some of the better assets out of these SIVs so they could provide liquidity back in to those structured investment vehicles. I generally support initiatives that the Treasury wants, and also that the industry wants. I'm concerned, though, that it's an artificial mechanism, and that, in effect, you might be better off letting the assets find their values and work through them the way they are currently structured. But I would publicly always be supportive of what's going on.
It's now 1:30. I want to thank Bill for being here and John for handling the Q&A and for getting him here. And don't forget to turn your name badges in as you leave. Thank you again. Have a good weekend.